Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Christian Corley, and this is the Casterbridge Podcast with a K. What you heard was an explosion of newsworthy goodness as we discover another uncovered oddity in this week's Casterbridge Podcast with a K. With me are James McLean.
Hello.
And Terra Solo, also known as Brian Terranova.
Hola.
How are you doing, guys?
Swell.
It's a bit theatrical today, aren't we, Christian?
Yes.
It's a good thing, too, because I thought that bomb sound effect meant that our podcast was going to bomb from the beginning.
Again. So, yes. We all sat around with our jaws hitting various desks and shoes, mouths agape at the news at the weekend of an undiscovered Doctor Who script, which apparently has an audio attached to it, which has so far not been discovered. Now, I don't know about you guys. I know Brian got the email before me. For some reason, he was sent the email rather than me. Don't know why this happened.
It's just because I'm cooler than you.
Yeah. And we were both a bit little, ooh, well, that's a little strange, isn't it? Why haven't we heard of this before? I don't know. What about you, James? Did you, when you heard about it?
Yeah, well, I said to you, didn't I? I was half thinking, is this actually real? Because you sent to us, you sent me a clipping, and
that's
the clipping
right.
looked kind of old, and I was thinking, is this something from, you know, bygone eras I should know about, and I don't? Do I have to pretend to keep my reputation that I know all about this, because it's so everyone? Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, if you're not aware, basically what has happened, it's been known in certain circles that Peter Cushing recorded an audio, presumably with Roberta Tovey or Jenny Linden. It's not clear at the moment, but with a character playing his granddaughter, in the late 60s, around 1966, 1967, for what was supposed to be the first episode of a series of six 23-minute audio adventures, written by Malcolm Hulk, who obviously went on to write some excellent Doctor Who episodes, including Doctor Who and the Silurians and the Sea Devils. Now, legendary Doctor Who researcher Richard Bignall has turned up a lot of the information. We were contacted by Charles Norton on late on Friday, I think, Brian?
Yes, I believe
that's it. Late on Friday, who tipped us off that there was going to be something in the Times the following day, and that the full information would be in the new edition of Nothing at the End of the Lane, which is out now. You can get a copy from www.endofthelane.co.uk. It's fascinating stuff. We've got a page about it on Casterbridge, which we'll link to in the podcast. But the whole notion of it is just, it's wonderful, but at the same time, it's balmy that it's one of these things that has been lost in the midst of time.
It's a bit of a Remembrance of the Daleks moment, where time seems to have almost been retconned for new information, as if we were meant to know all this and we haven't, and suddenly it's just been put into our story, and we were all sort of kind of shocked that, you know, where the hell is this? Isn't it in our history before? And,
yeah, totally.
I mean, exactly. Why the hell is not? Why is Tovey and what's it never actually said anything? I mean, they've done commentary. Say, I'm sure. I mean, Roberta.
Well,
did
we don't
one
know
for
definite. We know that there's a granddaughter character in it, according to the notes in the newspaper. We don't know who it was.
But you think they'd have contacted her by now and asked.
Yes, yeah.
But I just mean, you'd have kind of thought, if it is her, let's presume for a second that it is. And as you're right, we can't presume that at all, but we will. I find it incredible that she's never mentioned it, because you'd think in a commentary or something, she'd sort of say, yes, but when I worked with when I worked with Peter a little later on, when we did these radio, we tried a radio, but, you know, you think it would come out. So maybe it isn't her for that reason. But
loved your commentary voice right there, by the way.
Yeah,
very
I know.
Good.
It's,
very good. What I want to know is after Peter Cushing passed away, why, you know, his fans didn't go nuts, like looking for every little scrap of work that he had done that really wasn't on some kind of DVD or something like that. Usually fans go nuts, especially when this article mentions that in the 80s this was talked about,
yeah,
which this is actually the first I've heard of it. I've never actually heard of a Cushing radio drama before. So if people already knew about it, you'd think they would have been out there like scouring, looking for the thing, especially since it says it's been recorded. So I'm just curious where the heck it is.
Yeah. I mean, it's got to be there somewhere, hasn't it? I mean, you might be onto something. It might be Peter Cushing fans. Because this is an actor who died. He was in his 80s when he died, wasn't he? No, he was in his 90s. He was very old. And he'd made an immense number of TV and cinematic movies, as well as radio work. So he certainly has his fans. And then you've got the fans from the horror genre, of which he was a leading light, of course, in the 1960s, 50s, 60s, through the 70s even. So, you know, you could be onto something there, Brian. That could be where they persist. For me, though, it's, I mean, the wind-up quality of it and what James said about the retconning, obviously, it is true. This is a real item that the BBC licensed, and one recording was made from a series of six that were planned. So presumably it was some sort of like pilot for internal pilot, just to check whether it was something that they wanted to carry on with. It looks as though the episodes, following episodes, would feature Julius Caesar, Marco Polo, and cavemen, almost as if they were planning on doing audio adaptations in much the same way as the movies were adaptations of the Dalek serials. These would be audio adaptations or follow a similar path, because obviously they've got similar characters. As some of the first series of episodes. If this had come out in April, no one would have believed it. It's got all the hallmarks of an April Fool's joke, hasn't it?
Yeah.
What you're talking about with the retconning about stuff that we should know about what we don't. Like long lost episodes, etc., etc. I mean, the whole thing's fascinating, and I love the artwork that's come with it as well. But I mean, even the artwork could easily. I'm not saying it's fake, because you know the people involved sort of are a guarantee that it hasn't been faked. But that artwork could have been faked as well easily, you know, kind of, because it's very of the era.
It does have a bit of an odd feel to it. I mean, like I said, I don't know if you guys, have you guys heard about this before, this article?
No.
Yeah, see, neither did I. And you would think that we would have heard something all this time. That was the only thing that made me sit here and go, really? Is this real? Or is somebody like just, you know, having a game for some reason? And I don't want to say that it's not real, but it's just odd that something in this realm that is so rare and so interesting hasn't been heard of before by any of us. You think we would have come across it somehow.
Well, that's it. I mean, when an institution like fandom fails to know that there's an actual script of a Doctor Who, like, you know, you just, it's astounding. You think the fandoms are the one thing that would never miss anything like this. And it's a great embarrassment. If we were a political party, we'd be ashamed at this moment.
Well, also, Big Finish earlier, or like a year or two ago or so, they did the stage plays as lost stories, kind of, in a way. So they did like the Trevor Martin play and the one with Colin Baker and yes, the one with Colin Baker and
John
Pertwee and rotating.
And David Banks.
Yes, and David Banks. And I know they've been going, like, their Lost series have been, you know, they've been expanding. So rather than just being the Lost season that was Colin Baker's, you know, original second season, they have expanded to even just finding scripts that were talked about.
Yeah.
To the point where let's go ahead and find somebody new to write this entirely old script from scratch and say that it's a Lost story. You'd think that they would have found this Cushing script, considering it's completely done already and done something with that. You know, especially expanding their Unbound doctors, you know, like, you know, the Trevor Martin one and so on, the ones that actually don't count. They've already hit that realm. You think that they would have jumped at the chance to do a Peter Cushing.
Well, OK, let's even go to a more logical step here. Terence Dix, I mean, he worked with Hulk a hell of a lot. How you think that the people actually involved in Doctor Who would be aware and interested in sort of mentioning this as somebody? You think someone within the actual sphere of the industry would have mentioned it, so fans would have learned about it, and then fans would have, you know, got excited about it, and we would all know about it. But that's what's so crazy. It's not even like the writer was unrelated to Doctor Who. If they got a writer who wasn't related to Doctor Who, I could understand this sort of falling by the wayside and disappearing into the archives. But it had very, and obviously Doctor Who being a BBC flagship. Even then, it was, you know, it was showing that it was something that people recognize as being very BBC. You'd think that there would be more connections, more obvious connections to this happening. So yeah, it feels like a retcon.
Yeah,
I've never been part of a retcon before. It's kind of exciting.
There is something rather wonderful about the whole thing, obviously. I mean, Richard Bignall has said that there are at least two copies of the tape made. There's a chance that it's still stuck at the back of a cupboard somewhere. He's pretty much drawn a blank in looking for it, though. But the most interesting quote, and I'm going to do a voice for this, comes from, at the time, Martin Esslin, who was head of sound drama at BBC Radio, who wrote in a memo about the recording. As a typical commercial product for unsophisticated listeners in Australia, or even some parts of the United States, it stands up quite well. As a piece of science fiction, however, it strikes me as extremely feeble. Now, I'm aware that my voice changed slightly during that. 13 accents in 13 words. But, you know, the unsophisticated listeners in Australia or some parts of the United States, but that's just...
We'll get your accent.
It's horrifically apt for the time, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, BBC management at the time. Hopefully just at the time and not now. but, I mean, this could have been the tip of the iceberg for a whole new life for that bizarre cinematic Doctor Who. Couldn't it?
And weren't the films trying to reach further than England? Weren't they trying to go to, like, America and Australia and
so on? Exactly, yeah.
I'm sure a similar memo was written up for them as well. I mean, I've always kind of regretted the fact they never did a third, because I remember them saying, or it might be on one of the special edition box DVDs, where they say that if they'd done a third one, it probably wouldn't have had the Daleks. It would have been the Doctor, as I recall. And that's sort of kind of interesting, because that sort of ties into these radio plays. And it would have been nice to have seen the Cushing character get away from the, you know, the 60s iconic sort of mania of the Daleks, and see where they could have taken that.
It is interesting, James, to hear you say that you wanted a third, because I know Christian and I have said before that we both enjoyed them on a fun level. They were fun adaptations. They were different films, and certainly the cinematography, you know, and the visuals, and of course Daleks in bright color, etc. Not like the Daleks we got in Moffat's era, but anyway. But it's interesting to hear you say that you want a third film, because most people that I talk to think that those films were an embarrassment and wish that they would be lost and so on. Where I disagree. I mean, they're not canon Doctor Who. They're not like continuing the TV story, but they were still fun.
Yeah.
You know, they're still a nice little change and a little distraction, you know?
I mean, if they'd said, that these films should take over from the TV show, and the TV show should be removed and continued on as Peter Cushing films, and I'd say, yeah, no, I wouldn't want that. But as a side franchise, it's the same with, you know, what we talked about a few months ago about this whole mooted Doctor Who film and people sort of getting all upset about that, but, you know, because it wouldn't be in canon or anything. But who cares? You know, as long as you've got your Doctor Who going on, I think it's kind of fun to see what other things can do and how they can be done. And there was nothing wrong with them, in my mind, critically. They did what they were meant to do.
No, they were trying to cash in mainly on the Daleks more than the Doctor.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
So they definitely did what they were supposed to do. The story of the Doctor wasn't quite as important to keep it the same. So, yeah, I mean, they definitely did. And like I said, I mean, I've watched them many times. I've loved the second one for years. That was my first exposure to Bernard Cribbin. So when he got cast in the main series, I mean, I was ecstatic because I just thought he was brilliant. You know, he's hilarious in that thing. And yes, they're just adaptations of two of the first Dalek stories. But at the same time, sometimes when I feel like watching one of those particular stories, I actually sit there and go, no, I want to watch the movie version. You know, it's not like I'm sitting there going, it must be canon Doctor Who. It's just sometimes those movies are fun to watch.
Yeah, I think so as well. Nice soundtrack as well. Soundtrack's fun. And I think they're actually quite fun, because what a lot of people hate, let's face it, about the movies is the canon factor. People can't get past the idea that he's called Doctor Who, that he is a grandfather who creates this police box TARDIS in his home. But what I think is kind of funny about the films is that they're quite smart in the fact that you totally forget that within the first 5 minutes. Once they're in Skyro, you're back up, you're into the story on Skyro, and you've forgotten the fact that they came from his little house where he built this time machine in his backyard and his name is Doctor Who. And it doesn't matter. And it's kind of clever, the fact that they just glossed over the whole legacy of the show, of the Doctor, for the, as you say, in favour of the Daleks. And you don't actually need it. The story runs without having the background to who the Doctor is, and you can just enjoy it for the characters, if you can get past Roy Castle pratfalling at every given moment.
I think the personally, I always loved the second film as a child more than the first.
Yes.
I think it's probably because of the action factor and, you know, scope. It's on Earth.
Yeah.
Sorry?
There's a lot of scope in it. There's a lot of ground cover, different locations and everything, which is a lot of exciting.
As an actual movie, critically, I think the first one's a better movie.
That's interesting.
I just think it holds together better, I think, and I think the production's a little bit more polished on the first than it is on the second. However, something that I've noticed recently when I was compiling the article on Saturday, and thanks to my dad, by the way, for providing the scan and saving me having to give money to Rupert Murdoch, I found the image of Peter Cushing as the Doctor. And it occurred to me, and I haven't seen it on DVD, so I wasn't aware of exactly what the quality of it was now, but it's been polished up something amazing. It appears to be high resolution. Obviously, it can't be high resolution because it hasn't been recorded in high resolution. But it really does look like the DVD copies are in very good, very good quality indeed.
Yeah, I've got the DVDs.
Have you? I've still got the video.
DVDs as well.
Right.
And I love it. Yeah. Well, because they've got that sort of Technicolor, haven't they?
So yes. Yeah.
They just naturally sit well in the medium. And the other beautiful thing about it is because the general way that the production's done, there's not any of those nasty glitches really in those two films that are ruined by DVD. Like if you watch Disney's The Black Hole, it actually looks better on the VHS because on the DVD you can see all the strings. And over the overlays.
Hold on. Who would watch The Black Hole on DVD?
I do. I'm waiting for the special edition one day, you know.
Right, okay.
Film. But yeah, I think I think they're good films. I think they're different films. I don't particularly like Cushing as a Doctor, I have to say. I mean, he is pretty much what you'd imagine as a sort of slightly uninspiring take on William Hartnell.
Mm.
There's nothing much really there that you could say is astounding. And Roy Castle.
I think there is one
irritating
thing that's astounding, and that is the fact that it's Peter Cushing. It's the same guy who plays Grand Moff.
Yes,
Tarkin,
that is
same,
true.
You know.
Yes.
It's just it does seem to be a bit two dimensional.
It is, yeah. That's very true. And we've got Roy Castle, the original incarnation of Richard Hammond, in my opinion. I love Roy Castle. I'm not so keen on Richard Hammond, but he's a bit of an idiot in that film. And I know they obviously wanted to have some comic relief, and he does it very well. But it does sort of belittle the power of the Daleks, which again, I know, mainstreams for kids as well. But being a big Ian fan, that was a bit of a shame. But apart from that, I think the first one is good, because some people say the TV version of the Daleks is a little long, especially when you get to the last three parts.
Mm.
So in a way, you could argue that the Daleks is a very good, it is actually a very good way of compacting what was, you know, a seven episode story. Yeah. Into 90 minutes, and you don't really notice it, I don't think, particularly, that it's been so truncated.
I agree with that, because I have felt that the TV one was a bit long. It's like one of those ones that you don't necessarily, or you can't always sit through in one viewing. But you hit on a good point, though, like with Cushing's Doctor, for me. One thing that I've always said about Hartnell's era is I never really, with any of the other Doctors, I always kind of felt, I want to be the Doctor. I want to go traveling the universe like this man. You know, with the first Doctor, I always kind of felt like I sympathized more with Ian. And I watched the show because Ian was the hero, you know. And and when it came to the movies, it's odd that the Ian character kind of became the comic relief. Now, Bernard Cribbins, to his credit, he just has such stage presence, such screen presence that, you know, it worked, and he was still a joy to watch, and he was still good, and I still like sympathized with him and so on, you know. But yet definitely the Doctor wasn't the Doctor that we know from 2 onward, and he wasn't even necessarily the first. You know, he kind of was a little bit flat and a little bit, like you said, just the wrong kind of interpretation. But it is sad to see that the Ian character wasn't strong like he should have been.
Which is what's so exciting about the idea that we could possibly maybe one day have an audio adventure with Peter Cushing able to play the Doctor again without the Daleks and see if he does bring anything a little different to his role. I have a horrible feeling it probably isn't much different, but it's a nice option to actually imagine that there could be something else for that character. I mean, I suppose he's not that bad. When I rewatched them, I didn't find him as boring and as vapid as I did when I was a kid. I mean, I used to watch it as a kid because I liked the colours and I liked the big blue police box and its inner white light was all kind of exciting and mystical and the Daleks. But he's not bad. He's just... he's too safe, isn't he? I think that's the problem with him. Yeah. He's not particularly eccentric. He's not particularly abrasive. He's not particularly anything except a bit dotty. And that's a shame, really.
You know, the flip side, too, of what I said earlier about I know, like, a lot of people who kind of wish the films didn't exist is I know a couple of people in the costuming world who go nuts trying to put together the perfect Cushing outfit because they love Peter Cushing. They love his Doctor. Also, there are people that I know, like, they make their own custom Doctor Who figures, and he's a big one for people to customize. So he's definitely got his fan base out there. He's definitely got people that really liked his Doctor and really liked those movies. So, I mean, obviously, a rediscovered radio drama like this would definitely not go unwanted or unnoticed.
Oh, I'd buy it, no doubt.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's incredible. I mean, and the kind of hope is out there because, I mean, the other week we were talking about Lost Doctor Who and we were saying about the chances of ever there being any more was one of Christian's questions. And I've been watching the Lost Tales DVD.
All right.
And on the on the special features there, I mean, it talks because the special feature there is primarily the one that came out on the VHS I suppose it must have been the 90s. And at the very end, one of the people on there says the chances of there being any more Doctor Who is pretty much zero. What we've got now is pretty much all we're going to have.
And the then chances of there being any more Doctor Who were 1,000,000 to 1, they said. Was it like that?
No, it wasn't.
It should have been.
I wish it wasn't here either.
There was an appendix at the end of this special feature, which actually pointed out the two, as you were talking about again, Christian, about at the end of the 90s that were found. And obviously, since then, we've had another two in this last year now.
Sure.
So that's an extra 4 on top of the multitude of little tiny clips that have been popping up.
So what do you think it is? Are we going to get an average of 4 every 12 years?
Well, it could be, but I think it gives us hope that there's always, you know, when anyone says that there is going to be no more, that there is always that chance of there being being another. And I hold out hope.
I still feel one of the best places is still here at home, you know, like just like that guy who.
Well, your house. You've got them.
My house. Stop it. People are going to raid my home. They're my private films. I view Doctor Who for me and myself, damn it. But no, I mean, that guy, he had those two episodes and he didn't even know. It's like they have these film canisters because they collect this stuff, but they don't watch them. So how many people have those things just because they're like, well, this is this great old film. You know, they're terrified to watch them for destroying them, and B, they just don't want to watch them or they don't have the time to watch them. So they've got to have like tons of these things somewhere in somebody's attic. You know, certainly people connected with the show, too, that are still alive, that took something home, you know, and they're just not thinking about it all these years because, you know, it's not their most prized possession. And it's also a job that they spent such little time on. You know, they've got to have something else there in their homes.
Well, I'll counter that and say I would say the chances are more likely overseas because as a documentary pointed out, which is very true, there's a lot of people overseas who have always generally presumed that like any sane massive worldwide production company that they would have copies of all this, and it isn't as well known that there's so many missing stuff. So I wonder whether there are archives out there where there are a couple of these episodes and people are there and the people who've got them are just utterly oblivious that they are the only ones with the copy.
Sorry, no, wouldn't it be excellent to find out that there was this huge community of Doctor Who fans in Eastern Europe and Russia in the 1960s and copies were smuggled out to them through the Berlin Wall? and there's this massive archive every single
through the Berlin Wall, like they've got a little letterbox.
Yeah. No, by one of the checkpoints, obviously. No, and you know, they were smuggled across into the Eastern Bloc, and they all exist there in some cellar in Moscow.
Oh, I'm kind of thinking now somewhere in Peru, in a deep dark jungle, and there's the whole whole boulder and
with the Nazis.
Yes, and
De Flores and all of those.
Yes, and Indy out there is having to weigh his sand up against the reels of Doctor Who sitting on some. Oh, I could see Gatiss doing a small DVD mini sketch of that. It seems like something that'd be up his street.
I'm just going back to the whole missing and found. I'm just switching it over to an audio aspect. I'm not too au fait with what BBC did with audios during the 1960s. One would presume that at least one of these copies went to the BBC and they kept hold of it if they were able to listen to it. Presumably both of them went to the BBC with them being licensed properties. So my question is, that we might want to discuss or speculate upon, is could they have been overwritten? Could they have been wiped? Again, I don't know what the situation. Presumably, audio tape was a lot cheaper than videotape in the 1960s. And with the BBC having a long history of broadcasting on radio before television, that we know they had tapes of older things. And there's a lot of archive material from the 1960s is available on DVD, such as Hancock's Half Hour, the Kenneth Horne's, various Kenneth Horne series, then the old drama, presumably, as well. So what do you think, James?
It's hard to say, isn't it? Because it's departmental, I think.
Yeah.
Be my guess was, as I remember reading how that obviously one of the factors with the BBC was that there was so much issues with rights and royalties and how many times they could air shows, which made a lot of these sort of shows redundant, and, you know, to a certain degree, and probably a lot more optional to more open to being removed. I think my only hope would be that the radio, being a very, very different department to television at the BBC, and a very, very respected department with that ran independently of the television, that kind of hoping that the same sort of mandates weren't cross department.
Yeah, definitely.
But
yeah.
Then if they weren't, would we have already found this? Would it already be, I don't know.
Yes, that's an interesting way of looking
at
it.
But
at
the same time too, I mean, I don't know quite how the BBC operates, obviously, but audio tape certainly is one of the easiest things to record over. But I would hope somebody attached to the project, you know, wouldn't have wanted to see their work destroyed and maybe pulled a Monty Python and pulled the tapes and saved them for themselves. You never know. Someone who's connected to it could actually have this, and maybe that's why it's not out there, just because it's their private work.
Plus, it's Cushing. I mean, I know this sounds a very snobby thing, but you'd kind of hope that while Doctor Who was considered sort of slightly lowbrow and slightly silly, even by the BBC in the 70s, it still had a slight, especially the 60s stuff, a snobby sneer to it. Kind of hope that sort of like having Cushing's name attached to it, which had a international connection to him, as you say, through Hammer Horror particularly, that maybe people wouldn't be so keen to go for that one first. I don't know.
We've probably missed a big section of people who may have heard this or have a copy of it, and that's Star Wars fans as well.
Yes, the Star Wars as well. I mean, it may be the fact that it wasn't actually aired. If it was an unreleased pilot, that could go against it or could go for it. You could argue that it wouldn't be archived maybe quite in the same sort of repository as those which have been aired.
Mm.
At the same time, does that mean that it would be more open to being deleted since it was never...
Sure.
It never went out there. I don't know.
Question too is how far was it edited? You know, was there just a rough edit? No, no theme music, no credits, no anything like that. Maybe not even proper sound effects, just to get the idea of whether or not the radio drama.
I think if it was internal, then I don't think it would have been posted, would it?
So do you think? Big Finish are already trying to get their hands on it? Their quote McCoy, their grubby protuberances.
Oh,
I would think now that it's come to light, they're probably trying to do all the legwork to find out if it's indeed 100% legit.
No, I think
what we know so far, the people that are involved with this and the fact that it's in the Nothing at the End of the Lane magazine, I think which also deals with this current issue also deals with Dark Dimension, so it might be worth getting a copy. I think the people that are involved, I think pretty much we can be certain that it is genuine. I'd be surprised. I mean, it'd be good if Big Finish could do it, but I think probably the focus at the moment is getting finding it, isn't it? Finding the audio rather than adapting it.
Yeah.
But there was only one part done, right?
Yeah, apparently. So, you mean adapting the other five as well?
Correct.
Yeah. I don't see why they shouldn't.
I think they definitely would, to be honest. I think they would actually jump at the chance. I mean, they have to know the market. They have to know the buzz that's already been created by it, and they already know. I mean, like I said, they went after that one play with Trevor Martin, you know, and I mean, I'm not downing that play or anything like that, but who really knows about that play in total mainstream fandom enough to sit there and say, I need to see that one?
I think the only thing I ever knew about it was from reading about it in Doctor Who the 70s, I think.
Right.
Mine was Peter Haining's History Through Time, one of those, which I think mentioned it. But yes, I know what you mean.
You know, to show you an American exposure to it, I only knew about it from the internet, like years and years and years later.
Yeah,
you know?
But that's what this whole new Peter Cushing thing's like, isn't it? It's like reading about something magical in the past in a book that no one's ever heard of before, because there's no internet for other people to share the thoughts and
memories of it. It's exciting, isn't it? It's like actually getting one of those Peter Haining books from the 80s, and that was all that you had, was those, and reading through it and finding out things about Doctor Who you didn't know. And these days, you kind of know.
Very little.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's terrible.
How big is the paper that it was in? You know, is it a small paper? What is it? Because I don't know this paper.
The paper that it was published in?
Yeah.
You mean the fanzine or the newspaper at the weekend?
The newspaper at the weekend.
That was The Times.
Okay, and
which
that
is one of Rupert Murdoch's papers.
It's one of our largest broadsheets.
Okay, gotcha. Mm-hmm. But I guess if that's one of the largest.
Yeah, I mean the Times is big here, as I'm sure your New York Times or whatever. It's one of the major broadsheets. So and yes, one of the Murdoch ones. But I don't think there's any doubt there. I mean, there's always obviously the chance that there is a fakeness to this, which and poor people at the fanzine are genuinely. You know, I can't imagine that. Not with the people, the names that you've mentioned, it doesn't seem
possible.
Yeah. So, but it just feels like it should be possible. In fact, I'm vaguely annoyed that it's not possible because it seems so ridiculous. I would feel more comfortable knowing that it's a load of rubbish and it's just made up because it just feels made up from every angle. And yet it isn't. It's just, it's mind-blowing.
Yeah, it is. It's excellent stuff. And I think on that note, I think that's a good time to end this week's podcast with a K. We'll be back next week. We're not going to tell you what we're going to talk about because obviously we've been telling you we're going to be talking about Companion for the past 2 weeks and we still haven't done it. So you can wait and see what we do talk about next week. But until then, enjoy the rest of your week. See if you can get hold of a copy of Nothing at the End of the Lane. Remember, that's at www.endofthelane.co.uk. And we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.